This week in the news, Brandon Waltons and I talk about a new candidate joining the race for Texas House Speaker. Ross Kessig and I break down how some chambers of commerce are backing big government. In our interview, we talked to Aaron Harris of Direct Action Texas. They've caught a school district red-handed using shady tactics to increase taxes. And we'll close with a commentary from Sal Ayala on the hidden cost of corporate cronyism. Welcome back to this week's episode of Texas Scorecard Radio. I'm Tony McDonald, coming to you from the 1836 studios. Get started with this week's news. I go to Brandon Waltons, Capital Bureau Chief, Texas Scorecard. We've been talking about Drew Darby running for Speaker of the Texas House for a while, kind of behind the scenes. Yes. He's finally coming out and making that public now.
Yes, made it official recently, filed officially for Speaker of the House. He had been running sort of a behind-the-scenes campaign, Capital sources had told us.
Yeah, which is kind of illegal. Under state law, they're supposed to file and be out there public. So kind of interesting to see Darby finally bring himself into compliance with the law.
Yes, finally comes out and admits he is running for Speaker.
Yeah, so for background for listeners who maybe aren't the aficionados that we are of things that go on in the Texas legislature, you've got Texas House Speaker Joe Strauss has been in office for a decade, leaving the legislature, and is leaving this open race, this void for Speaker. And you've got all of these candidates lining up, some of them, like Darby, kind of on this side saying, hey, I want to be like Strauss was. I want to partner with the Texas House Democrats, handful of Republicans, all the Democrats, and get elected that way. And then there's this other group that says, no, we want the Republican caucus to pick a Republican speaker.
Right. And the Republican caucus, now this is the group of House Republican lawmakers in the Texas House, agreed last year that they would nominate, kind of elect a speaker candidate inside their caucus. And that would be the unified person they all support. Now, sounds great. Sounds great to have Republicans who control the state House picking their speaker. Unfortunately, there's some Republican lawmakers that have refused to sign a pledge saying they will support that individual.
Now, we've got a few of these candidates who seem to be kind of testing this path.
Yes.
So Darby's the latest entry.
Darby's
and
the
let's
latest.
Talk about these guys real quick.
Yes, we had Darby. We had State Representative Travis Clardy out of Nacogdoches recently.
Darby's from San Angelo, West Texas.
Yes. And we have even State Representative John Zerwas, who is one of the first to announce.
Yeah, and so these guys are kind of going over here and talking to the Democrats and saying, hey, we want you to unite and elect us. And actually, we're seeing now that they're like interviewing with the Democrats.
Yes, they're actually, we've got Democrats like State Representative Trey Martinez Fisher, a very liberal Democrat who's coming in saying, hey, well, I want to talk to these people and we'll decide who's going to be the next speaker, sort of forget the caucus, right?
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting, and I think there will be a lot more reporting to do as we move forward about how these guys do it. Now we have Darby and more entrants into the race.
Yes, yes, and I think as we approach the legislative session next year, we're going to see more and more people enter this race.
Thanks for your reporting on it, Brandon.
Thank you.
Now let's turn to Ross Kessig up in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Ross, what's the deal with the Chambers of Commerce up there? They seem to be supporting tax increases?
Yes, at a local Plano City Council meeting, only four people stood up to testify in support of the city's proposed tax increase. And one of them was the president and CEO of the local Chamber of Commerce. What's interesting is that no actual business owners were there testifying for the property tax increase. In fact, hundreds of citizens through an online petition, from calling into council opposing the tax increase or from testifying at the meeting, literally hundreds of taxpayers testified against the tax increase.
Yeah, now let's talk about this increase a little bit, just to, so people understand. This is a pretty crazy increase. There's been a lot of increase in taxes in Plano over the last few years, and they want even more. And, you know, population isn't really keeping up with that.
Right. So over the last 4 years, prior to this year's proposed increase, the average Plano homeowner has paid a 36% tax increase to the city of Plano. That's just the city taxes. If this 4.5% increase proposed this year goes through, that means the average Plano homeowner will have paid a 40% tax increase in just 5 years, which The city of Plano has only grown about, let's say, about 5% over that same time period. So a 40% tax increase, 5% population growth, the numbers just aren't adding up.
Yeah, so you have this huge expansion in local government there, and yet nonetheless, and local citizens showing up. I mean, there were quite a few people opposing the increase at the meeting.
Right. So you had about a half a dozen folks actually got up and very eloquently testified against the tax increase. You had about 44 citizens sign cards, meaning they didn't speak against it, but they signaled their opposition in writing against the tax increase. And then I delivered over, you know, 570 petitions from Plano residents who had said they signed a letter opposing the tax increase.
All right, so it should be kind of a no-brainer. Typically, you think of chambers of commerce. Hey, these are representing the interest of business owners, and business owners obviously don't want to be, you know, raked over the coals and paying higher taxes. Yet you have the Chamber of Commerce president there as one of the only people cheerleading for this tax increase. What gives? Is there really any kind of explanation?
Well, you know, in her testimony, the chamber president said that, you know, the businesses appreciate the investments that the city's making in the community with the infrastructure and the public safety and the economic development, you know, corporate welfare they're handing out to only a few big businesses. And so that they want this to continue, you know, is what she said. But she was testifying, you know, during a public hearing. Which was, you know, they had to hold because they're holding a tax increase. So she was basically trying to justify that the tax increase imposed on homeowners and businesses was some sort of investment, and implying that the business community was in support of it. But like I said, no actual business owners were there.
Yeah, now,
and it's unclear to me if the chamber's members even know she was there doing this.
Well, now, Tony Ortiz went over to the Chamber of Commerce meeting and said, hey, you guys are supporting a tax increase. What gives? It sounds like the business owners, the actual members of the Chamber of Commerce, don't actually support this sort of thing.
Right. So a few days later, Tony Ortiz from Empower Texans went to the actual chamber meeting where the business members actually meet, and stood up. Everyone has 30 seconds to talk about their business. And he stood up and said, hey, I just want to let you know that your president was over there representing you, claiming that you want a tax increase. So, you know, I don't know if you guys support it or oppose it, but, you know, we didn't see any business owners, you know, at the city council meeting, but just wanted to let you know that the chamber took the position publicly that all you people support a tax increase, and not a lot of people were happy about that.
Now, so part of the answer here, you were pointing out the board of advisors for this chamber is kind of interesting.
Yeah, so the actual board of the chamber is made up of representatives from the business community, but they have this thing called the board of advisors. So I guess it's the advisors to the board. And it's made up of four people, someone from the city's Economic Development Corporation, the city manager of the city of Plano, the superintendent of the school district, and then a representative from the community college. So you have people from four of the major taxing entities, the government entities, actually advising the chamber. So it makes me wonder whether or not they're the ones that instructed the chamber's CEO to go over and lobby for a tax increase.
Yeah, I think that's the case. We see this all over the state, where essentially chambers of commerce have become captured by local governments, and they are effectively cheerleaders for the local government as opposed to representatives for the businesses. I appreciate y'all reporting on it and kind of catching them in this. It's very interesting.
Absolutely.
Texas Scorecard Radio is a project of Empower Texans. At texasscorecard.com or empowertexans.com, you can find more news and daily updates from all around the Lone Star State. You can also find updates from Empower Texans and Texas Scorecard on Facebook and Twitter, and follow Empower Texans on Instagram. Texas Scorecard's News Digest goes out weekly via email and monthly in print. Subscribe online and find more information at empowertexans.com. Someone's always keeping score. We think it ought to be the taxpayers.
Well, it's great to welcome our friend Aaron Harris with Direct Action Texas on the program this week. Aaron, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tony. It's great to be on with you again.
Yeah, so a big video, y'all, a little undercover investigation you did actually with Tony Ortiz with Texas Scorecard as well, doing some investigation into some illegal election shenanigans up in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Tell us a little bit about what y'all found.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, it was actually a great kind of first time we did a cross-pollinated co-venture between Empower Texans and DAT. So Tony Ortiz from Scorecard and Robert Montoya here from Direct Action Texas went out to Lancaster ISD. Now, Lancaster ISD had what's called a TRE election, tax ratification election. For those of you who don't know, for school districts, when they're going to increase their tax rate, they have to put it to a certain race. They have to put it to a vote of the voters.
So yeah, Lancaster, well, and there's supposed to be an election, but we're kind of running into these fake elections in August, right. And you know, the dead right. of summer. You know, you got to show up in the coach's office after practice to vote, vote for or against the election. That, that kind hallway. Of thing. Yeah,
that's right. And there's a lot of reasons they do that. One of which is rolling polling, and so we'll get into that. And so what Lancaster did, which is typical of these school districts, and by the way, mostly just school districts do this, is they have what's called rolling polling. So in the case of this particular case, which is not uncommon at all, they held a series of back-to-school parties the first week of school, which happened to be when they scheduled their early voting to be happening.
Yeah, so let's break this down for people. So there's, you know, this local school district wants to raise property taxes. And it was right. through this complicated swap and drop thing. But it, essentially, for the listener out there, they're moving money around. They're raising the property taxes. They're going to get more right. money. That's the whole point. And out of your pocket, right? That's mm-hmm. that's the idea. And so they're required to have an election because state law says, hey, if this is a good idea, the voters ought to approve of it. But the school district is not comfortable that they're going to win their election. So instead of holding a normal election where you have a set polling location and you just see who shows up, see what the results are, and take it as it comes, the school district says, all right, we're going to move during early voting. You know, Monday, we're going to be at the middle school to vote. And Tuesday, we're going to be at the high school. And Wednesday, we're going to be at the elementary school. And Thursday, we're going to be at a different elementary school. And we're just going to move this thing around.
All during the schools, by the way.
All at the yeah. schools.
All at the schools. And then they turn around and schedule events at that time to drive parents out. In the case of Lancaster ISD, they had back-to-school parties, okay, welcome back-to-school parties. And we've seen this across Texas and other school districts. In my district, for example, they did this a couple years ago. They had PTA meetings, coincidentally, the same time, same campus as this, what we call rolling polling. A rolling polling is a poll that's open for 4 hours, give or take, at one school for one day, and that's it.
It's to cater to, it typically, you know, when this was being done years ago, this was to cater to the employees at the school. That was the, okay, well, they're there for 4 hours at that school so that they can march all of the employees down there to go vote on company time, you know, being paid to vote. They vote right. then, but right. they're coming in with these pep rallies for the vote that are taking place exactly. on campus at the same time as the elections.
And so why is this important? First off, listeners need to understand, it is against state law for teachers and school staff to electioneer on school campus during school time. It is against the law for these schools to use school resources to electioneer. Now, the definition of electioneering in this case, we'll just make it real simple, which is to tell people how to vote, right?
Yep.
And so these schools always say, oh, no, we don't tell people how to vote. We just educate them on the bond.
Just now, informational.
Just informational. And these school districts typically spend $250,000 or more educating people on the bond, on these bonds. And it's always, you know, very fluffy. Unicorns will come. Your kids will get smarter, and nobody will have to pay for this money. It just shows up.
This
out
is magic.
Of
this is magic money that's going to show up. Yeah. So right. let's talk about a little bit about what the guys found. You know, they go in and first of all, tell people where they can go to the video, right? Because this video is yeah. up now. Tell people where they can find the video, and then let's talk a little bit about what's on the video, what they actually caught in the schools.
Absolutely. So the video can be found at directactiontexas.com. It can also be found at Empower Texans, but I'm going to talk about Direct Action Texas.
You might as well plug it. Yeah, no, EmpowerTexans.com. We can plug it on my end.
Empower Texans and Direct Action Texas both have the video posted in an article written by Erin Anderson. Those of you that read Scorecard know Erin Anderson well. She keeps up all election things. So what we did was we sent two guys, Tony Ortiz and Robert Montoya, with an undercover camera to go to these campuses. And so it's important to understand we went to multiple campuses on different days. So you can't say this was an outlier in a one rogue teacher or one rogue campus. We had dozens and dozens. Literally, pretty much every person they approached electioneered them. Now, the other thing I didn't mention is it's against the law to electioneer within 100 feet of the door of the building in which people are voting. These election parties
and certainly
are
within the building itself, right? That's a problem.
Within the building is strictly prohibited. Now, I would know something about this is I got cited last year for electioneering outside the 100 feet, but not where the city of McKinney wanted me to electioneer. And
right.
We've won that court case. And so the fact is the law is really clear. You can electioneer only 100 feet away from the door, outside the door, that voters are entering the building.
The point is you can't have people in the polling place telling people how to vote. It's supposed to be an opportunity for people to be free to come in there and vote how they want to vote.
That's right. So these voting parties were inside the building, in the hallways, in rooms adjacent to the polling actual room where the voting booths were. The very first clip we start the video off with that people can go see at directactiontexas.com. I'm going to read this teacher's quote. She says, "This is a so our undercover person says, what is it? What is going on here today? She says, this is a students back to school fair. And I quote, then we have voting going on because we're trying to get the parents to check yes. And as she says that, she motions a check mark in the air. And then quote, so we can get more money allocated to schools. Now, this was inside the school building, right across the hall from the polling location. We go on to, in the video, show you teacher after school staff.
Administrator, school staff. It's interesting. A lot of people who kind of are coordinators of teachers, you know, these kind of mid-level administrative staff. We've seen such a blossoming of all of these employees at these schools over years. Interesting to me as you go through, repeatedly the guys would go, well, so hold on. So this means I'm supposed to vote no, right? And no. We need you to vote yes. I mean, they're very quick to correct. You know, no. Yeah. I want you to vote yes. You need to vote yes. Just as if you were a block walker going door to door, knocking doors for a campaign. You say, hey, you know, I want you to vote for Mr. Smith. Yeah,
right.
It's exactly like that, except it's taking place on school taxpayer time. You know, at a taxpayer funded resource.
One of the ladies actually goes as far as to say, ask Robert, did you vote for the current mayor? And he says, yes. And he says, well, he's my father. And she does so in a way to exercise influence, right? Like, he's my father. You like him. Do what I'm telling you to do. This was right after she told him explicitly to vote yes. This is all in the video. And another thing to your point, when they say vote yes, right at the end of the video, he's in the hallway and he asks this male teacher if he should vote yes. And the response was a chorus. About five or six teachers that are in the hallway all yell, vote yes. Like, synchronized,
yeah,
right?
It's clear. Okay, so they're not getting training from the schools about what's appropriate, what's inappropriate. The outward show is, oh, this is just informational. This is something that fits within at least some loophole of the law. But what you're seeing is in practice, the employees go, vote for, vote against, vote the way we want you to vote. It's pure electioneering going on. And this isn't the only place where we've seen it. We just saw down in South San Antonio ISD, South San, as they call it there, the school literally taking the teachers, loading them on buses, and busing them down to the polling place to go vote. Now, they lost that election because they were overwhelmed, but, you know, this isn't just a one-city problem.
No, it's not. And it's also, what's important about this video is conservatives and Power Texans specifically has been out there saying this is what's going on, this is why they're doing roll-in polling.
Yeah.
And the school lobby and the school machine has consistently denied that
they've
ever
lied
do
about
this.
It.
They've lied about it. And parent after parent after activist tells us this is going on. So what we decided to do is just go get it on video. And what's interesting about this particular Lancaster ISD's election is when you look at the results, they won it by early voting in person. So their ability
break
to
down
push
those,
these
break
parents,
down those numbers. Break down those numbers, because I think it really illustrates the effect that these kind of tactics have in swamping the election. It's a low turnout election. I mean, it's designed to be a low turnout election held in August. Right. You know, when nobody nobody's paying attention. That's the point. You know, they could have put this thing in November. They don't. They put it in August. Tell us about the numbers.
Yeah, so the early voting in person, which is what I'm talking about here, the at these campuses, these rolling polling locations, was 269 people voted for and 65 voted against. In the mail-in
ballot, so overwhelmingly for and against.
Overwhelmingly
there. I mean, what are we looking at? Almost 4.5 to 1, something like that.
It's literally a 204 vote advantage for. But yes, it is roughly, yeah, 5
yeah,
to 1, 4 to 1. 1.
Yeah.
In mail-in ballots, though, they lost 34 to 27. On election day, it only won by 23 votes, 124 to 101.
Wow.
The overall was 424, 200 against it. But if you take away the early voting in person, there's only a 10-vote difference.
Wow.
When you take in mail-in ballots in election day.
This is why they're doing it.
Yeah. That's right. And so, like I said, in the district that I live in, Birdville, they did a bond a couple years ago. They did the same thing, but they did these PTA parties, right? So they try to distance it. Lancaster, these were the schools doing the parties.
Sure.
What Birdville did, they did the exact same thing, but they just had the PTA sponsor. So they say, oh, we're not doing it. The PTA parents are.
Yeah.
But it's the same tactic. Now, Tony, what you need to understand is, we've been saying that this is the reason they use rolling polling. There's no legitimate reason to not set your polling locations and have them open for 2 weeks and be done with it. They've denied it. I think it was 4 years ago, the legislature passed a kind of a bill to sort of prohibit rolling polling, but right at the end it got edited, and it only prohibits rolling polling on the uniform election days, November and May. This is one of the reasons, so you started talking about this earlier, this is one of the reasons these school districts hold these special elections in odd summer days.
It's so July, that they can August, engage, September. So that this way they can engage in these
Correct.
In these criminal tactics. Well, before we run out of time here, tell us real quickly, what is it that, I mean, first of all, obviously, people in local districts, if you've got a tax ratification election, you have to get your neighbors on alert. And go get them to the polls. You're up against a machine anytime this is happening, and it's one that can be overcome, but it takes real hard work by taxpayers. So that's one way that the individual can fight back. But what can the state do? I mean, something needs to happen here from the state in terms of holding these districts accountable, because this is criminal behavior.
You're right. So what we're going to see now is, will anybody step up and actually, we have video evidence of crimes being committed, of laws being broken. So the question now is, what state agency or local agency will step to the plate? I'm not holding my breath. As far as legislatively, I think this debate on rolling polling has been going on for a while. Hopefully this will be the nail in the coffin and we can once and for all outlaw rolling polling. But the biggest problem we have in Texas, Tony, when we run into a direct action Texas, as we uncover activities that should be prosecuted, is we simply have nobody in Texas that will prosecute these crimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the answer there really is, yes, people need to be talking to their legislators about reforming things, but they need to be, you know, as you've been out there speaking very loudly on, they need to be talking to the governor's office, they need to be talking to the attorney general, they need to say, hey, this is a problem. And,
Correct.
You know, if people are going to go in and commit criminal acts related to elections, it ruins our republic and our republican form of government. So they need to be holding these folks accountable. We're out of time. Quickly, tell folks where can they catch this video that y'all found or that y'all shot, and where can they learn more about Direct Action Texas?
Well, you just said it, directactiontexas.com. You can read about the Lancaster ISD as well as numerous other election-related issues that we have going on and other cases we've worked on. So directactiontexas.com. You can reach us there. You can also sign up to follow our emails. We only send out emails when we have new cases, so we don't bombard you with them.
That's great. Well, thank you for coming on, Aaron. Thank you for all the work you do.
Thanks, Tony.
Have you heard about the Texas Torchbearers program? It's a program that makes activism fun and exciting. You can sign up at texastorchbearers.com. There, you can learn about the easiest and most effective ways to engage your government officials in order to hold them accountable. As a Texas Torchbearer, you can earn cool prizes like an awesome pair of custom-fit cowboy boots with the Texas Torchbearer logo on it. As a promo, we gave away a beautiful custom-engraved Glock handgun. Sign up today at texastorchbearers.com. That's texastorchbearers with an S.com.
In this week's commentary, Sal Ayala talks about the hidden cost of big corporate handouts.
Last year, Amazon.com, the largest internet company in the world, with revenues approaching $235 billion, announced plans for a new headquarters. Shortly after, Amazon began soliciting proposals from localities for its site selection process, with a focus on deal-sweetening incentive packages. But what are those incentives, who will they cost, and how much are they worth? I'm Sal Ayala with this week's Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary. Having already capitalized on close to $1.24 billion in state and local incentives for other projects, the tax break packages and taxpayer cash being laid out before the e-commerce giant has the potential to dwarf that figure in a single deal, the ones we know about anyway. That's because cities across the country have kept their dealings with Amazon shrouded in secrecy. Houston isn't on the list of 20 finalists, but emails related to the city's bid hinted at a package of city, county, and state incentives worth $268 million. The entities developing proposals for Dallas and Austin, which are among the finalists, are claiming that information related to incentive packages are exempt from public disclosure. Those two cities' bids were handled through regional economic development groups, which, as a result of two recent state court rulings over disclosure, are claiming an exemption that now is based on creating any competitive disadvantage instead of a decisive one, and applying it to businesses rather than governmental entities. In a stark example of the extent of secrecy surrounding these deals, Maryland's Montgomery County disclosed a 10-page document of incentives with every single line of text redacted. At the high end, incentives and tax breaks can add up to billions, leaving existing taxpayers and businesses on the hook for services utilized by the favored company and the unfair burden of paying in while the recipient does not. Aside from traditional handouts, Washington, D.C. went so far as to propose an Amazon University. The details of Austin's first round bid, developed by the Greater Austin Chamber of Commerce, have yet to be disclosed. Attempts to procure related emails between the city and chamber were stifled when the Assistant Attorney General ruled the emails could be withheld. While Mayor Steve Adler has claimed no incentives were offered by the city, Austin could later supplement the existing bid with local incentives that include loans, grants, and tax abatements. State cash incentives, such as those provided through the Texas Enterprise Fund, are expected to be part of any deal as well. I don't know what we offered Amazon in terms of financial incentives, but I believe Amazon wants to see the biggest incentive package that any city will offer them, said Leslie Poole, a member of the Austin City Council. In Dallas, a similar situation is unfolding, where records requests submitted to the Dallas Regional Chamber are being kept confidential, although officials have said that the North Texas bid will be competitive with other packages that run into the billions offered elsewhere. Now they're in a game competing with one another to throw money at one of the most powerful companies in the world, run by one of the world's richest men, said Richard Florida, a professor at the University of Toronto, who helped develop that city's bid. He resigned to sound the alarm over the lack of transparency in the bidding process. I think the lack of transparency of this whole process is galling, he said. This has to be all out in the public. This is taxpayer money. Once Amazon has chosen a site, taxpayers will eventually be told the breadth of incentives promised to subsidize a multi-billion dollar corporation. According to Florida, when taxpayers discover that price tag, quote, there's going to be hell to pay. I'm Sal Ayala, and this was the Texas Scorecard Radio Commentary.
Well, that's all I have for you this episode. Join us back here each week for another episode of Texas Scorecard Radio.
Texas Scorecard. Texas Scorecard Radio is brought to you each week as a public service from the Empower Texans Foundation and in partnership with the Lincoln Institute and this station. You can download podcasts from each program and learn more at empowertexans.com.